time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hapgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. We've got a massive show in store, Redmond.
We do, and what a week of weather we have having. Sun's been out. It's not... Okay, it's a bit cold, but during the day is bloody beautiful. It's been absolutely terrific. I managed to get away, which we're going to talk about soon. We're
going to talk about some massive barrels. Alex Carey,
massive guest on the show.
Australian wicketkeeper. I don't know how you've done it, but you've wrangled probably the biggest guest we've ever had.
It's not what you know, mate. It's who you know.
Plus, a little bit of fishing and four-wheel drive news to kick off the show, Redmond. According to the manufacturer, there's a solar-powered electric car.
Well, we're going back to that electric thing, are we?
Well, I'm keeping us in the loop.
I was going to buy Tesla the other week, but I had to get Twitter with it.
Light Year One are claiming that their electrificated version of their car, which is solar powered and has a range of 725 Ks, but if there's constant sun, that you may never have to charge it or not charge it for months at a time.
Lucky we had a sunny week this week.
Volkswagen's execs during the week have confirmed that there would not have been a second generation Amarok. Now, you've got an Amarok.
I do. I've got the new Amarok. Well, was the new Amarok.
Without a partnership from Ford. Now, we've spoken about this at large. Now, obviously, there's huge excitement around the new Ford Ranger.
How does that work? A partnership with Ford.
Well,
how does two manufacturers have a partnership together?
So they're not sharing engine systems, but I suppose the research and development, they invest together. Now, what
it's like having two wives.
Well, there's a few people around the world that have that remedy. Now, there's Volkswagen have claimed that the partnership with Ford has saved them in excess of $1 billion, $1.3 billion Australian.
Just the homepage on Twitter.
So they came together in 2017, facing a deadline whether or not to proceed with the development of this second generation. And they weren't going to do it because they were putting, like so many car manufacturers, their energies and resources and funding into the electrification market. So
how's Amarok, though, being the leading car being sold in their range in Australia. And we don't even get looked upon in the world.
it would have finished up. So that's certainly good to see. More competition, Redmond, so it means it's better for the consumer. Kingfish being called out of the Sydney Ferries in the Balmain shipyard. This was quite extraordinary to see.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about now, yeah.
80 to 110 centimetre kingfish, Redmond. Now, they're in the dry dock. And when they went to empty it, all of a sudden there's all these kingfish swimming around. Quite incredible to see.
And all the workers are climbing down the stairs, passing them to one another and releasing them back into the main water.
Literally picking them up and putting them back in. So that was quite extraordinary to see. More swordfish bycatch, this time on soft plastics. When are we going up to...
Oh, this is just ridiculous.
Fish out of 20 metres of water and start jigging for swordfish on soft plastics.
It was at Kima in top of New South Wales.
15-pound line.
And another swordfish. What's going on there? Like, it's not, you've never seen it before, and then all of a sudden, well, we've had a couple of lost swordfish, but these are actually eating. Like, this is weird. So,
well, you would think after, and we spoke about this last week, like that's a one in a a decade sort of thing. A bit like when Barnaby Joyce was talking about the floods up in Queensland being, this is a 1 in 10,000 year occasion. And it's happened twice in 2 weeks. Well, that's the same thing with the swordfish. Yacht, unfortunately, Redmond, a father and son, very lucky to be alive after their yacht crashed into a reef late last Thursday night in Western Australia. So very lucky. So one unto rescue crew over in Western Australia. And this rolled across our Real Adventures deck during the week, but one of the biggest southern bluefin tuna caught in Australia on spin tackle, Bodie Penningberg, caught a monster, 155 kilos, in just over 2 hours.
He still can't walk.
That's a big fish.
It's a big spin fish, 155 kilo on spin. Now, we've got a few up to 120, 130 on spin, but 155 is another... It's another... Those fish that are 140 plus... They're on another league of their own.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just another fish. Like, they're another Sorry, they're a different type of fish to a 110 or a 120. They just...
The extra pulling power.
Yeah, they're just big. To knock it over in 2 hours, he's using some serious gear. Big, as good as reel you get, as good as rod you can get. Like, he's using some... The rods are made to do that, but very impressive. But there was multiple 140 to 150 plus kilo fish caught in the same day, days before. I got some beautiful fish as well, as out of Port Mac and Portland. This barrel fishery is insane. And we had some beautiful weather over that long weekend last weekend.
As insane as the boat traffic that's existing at the moment as well.
Can I have a little early gaff?
Go for it.
So Queensland boat ramp's been shut for, it is shut for 4 to 5 months of the year, from March to end of July to August. Probably blow out
which
to
is your local boat ramp for those unaware.
So during the week, I headed down to St. Leonard's, which is the next ramp sort of up. It's about 28-minute drive from my joint. Queensland's about 13.
Yep.
Went to go fishing, and because it's open to the northerly wind and the southerly wind, but we get a lot more southerlies and northerlies that are blowing heaters. So the southerly side, the south side of the ramp, which is two ramps, quite often has sand built up, and it's hard to put a bigger boat in.
Oh boy.
So the northern side's a fair bit deeper,
and
that's where everyone tries to launch.
Yes.
Well, a little Sammy the Seal decided he wanted to live on that little pier there. And when I say little pier, it's not actually like where you tie your boat up to. It's sort of, I call it the old man's jetty, where it's the old boy pulls in and ties his boat up quickly and gets his trailer. It's only probably like 5 meters long.
Bit like the one out of Jaws where he goes to fish.
Catch
the shark with a chicken on the end of it and then he gets towed out to sea.
It's exactly the same as that. So it's barely a pier. They've shut that whole side jetty. The one was open in the middle of the Easter break with Queenscliff boat ramp shut, just as fisheries advised for the Easter break. Queenscliff shut, let's all use St. Leonard's ramp, and they've shut the ramp. Not only that, there was boats stuck, like people having to walk their boat out. It was an absolute disaster. So whoever ever shut the ramp down for a seal, how about you head down to Apollo Bay, head down to Port Ferry, head down to Portland, might not even go to Port Mac for a change, and have a look how many seals are on the piers down there and we don't shut. Yes, they are dangerous. Stay away from it.
That's why you got flares. I mean, no, I definitely didn't say that's why we've got flares. Now,
the rocket flare.
Now, let's get back.
We just got sacked.
Let's get back to these really big southern bluefin tuna that you've been targeting.
Yep.
Now, how and what has been the most successful practice to give yourself the best chance to capture?
Bodie, who landed that big fish we were just talking about, he got his on a live red bait.
Yes. So he was out, found bait.
So bait ball could be getting worked up by the barrels, the dolphins, the seals, the whales, whatever it is, could be getting worked up to the surface, and they come up with a net, scoop them up, live bait tank, bang, chuck it on, drop it into the bait ball, away you go. Simple as that. There's other methods that have been working. Lures have been fantastic. Pilchards have been okay. Yakkers have been good if you can get a school of yakkers pushed up. So keeping your methods and everything, I guess, being open to everything is always a massive thing in fishing. But these barrels, a lot of people just used to use lures for them. But the problem is a lot of people now are going to this method of dropping baits. So once people start dropping baits on top of these fish, they can be hard to get with lures. So you sort of need to join in. You've got no real choice other than if you're the first boat there.
So you've got to start to learn new methods.
Yep.
If you're only... You know, attack point had been, we're going to troll skirts all day. It's time to start learning new methods.
Yeah, and if it gets rough, it's nearly impossible to drop baits in. It's just you're moving too fast. You can't sit on the bait. Waves are coming over the boat. But the other thing is you also need to learn new stuff, Pat. So if you're running, so I run 20,000 Stellars on my Samurai Extractor 100-pound rods for my spin gear to catch them. Now, these rods are serious rods and reels, and the braid's 80-pound. You need to have a very good FG knot. It caters for that line. But not only that, you need to have someone to flick it into the water, I like to get it into the bait ball. You
allow effort.
For it to sink. It's a team effort of me driving the boat too to keep the bait on top of in the bait ball. So there are different methods to do it, and around it is more than 100% possible. But pick your days, pick when you're going to do it. And if you can't get a bite on a lure in the first few passes, I would advise pillies, red bait, yakkers, even if they're dead, just float it down. It's always going to work. Well, not always going to work. You've got a very good chance of it working, especially if you're marking up fish. And you've got places like Mallacoota right now, the kingfish bite out of there, Pat. Insane.
Yeah.
Starbanks has been firing. Cody Banks out of sort of the far east side of Western Port, pushing towards the Gippsland. Cody Banks out wide there has had some serious amounts of school tuna on there too. and right up to South Australia. Like, we've got the whip around soon, but yeah, it's been a great long weekend. It was in fishing.
Got a huge show coming your way this morning. Alex Carey, the Australian wicketkeeper, joins us. We're going to chat not only sort of cricket and sport, but more importantly, Redmond, we're chatting about the new boat that he's in the market for. All that and plenty more on Real Adventures this morning.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Let's find out what's biting in your part of the country and find out a few of the notable sort of big bites. Now, New South Wales, the Naruma Kingfish, as Aaron said, on the other side of the break. They're going really well at the moment. Live bait and squid strips.
They're going mad.
Have been the most successful. You'll still get them on jigs once they're worked up, Redman.
Do you know why I won't get them on jigs?
Why?
Because I'm not stupid enough to do it. That's what your mate's for. They're hard work jigging if they don't want to eat, but when they do, it's probably the most fish hitting that jig, bringing it in, Pat. There's not much better feeling than that, is there?
And if you're happy to risk losing a fish, once again, keeping one of those fish around the boat at all times keeps those fish energised and excited, and it gives you a greater chance to catch more. Maroubra. In the afternoons, the Australian salmon, Redmen, have been going really well. No surprises there. They're being caught on metal lures. You can pretty much any sort of metal lure. Yep. You don't need to go too heavy with it, depending on how far you're casting. But it's been fishing really well. In South Australia.
Yeah, it has. Edinburgh. Is that how you pronounce it, Patrick?
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. Yep. Some huge whiting. Bag limit captures of big whiting. 50-plus centimetres, which is great to see. The old cocktail bait, bit of squid. Bit of pippy, always put the squid on at the end so it acts as a tail and it will stop your bait from spinning. You won't have Johnny Angles. So please be smart when you put your bait on because it will save you so much time and catch you more fish. At the start of the show, we mentioned Port Macdonald, and I'm going to keep it in here. It's just over the border. You nearly claim it as Victoria, to tell you the truth, Pat, when you're a Victorian, Port Mac, but you can't.
Not sure that's that's passing the pub test in South Australia.
You can't actually do it because as soon as you cross some magic line, your phone changes 30 minutes and you feel funny. So it's Port Mac is on fire with big barrel bluefin tuna, so it's well worth heading down there. And there's still some school tuna hanging around the normal ports that we've spoken about over the last 2 weeks as well, Pat.
Queensland, Hervey Bay has had some epic fishing action this week with mackerel, tuna, trevally, queenfish, and all reef sort of species really feeding hard. And along the beach in Tweed, do fish fishing really well. Taylor and Brim have all been really consistent. So we've seen some...
On worms.
Some horrendous weather, Redmond, but we're starting to see some really good captures now. And was it the brim on worms you were talking about?
Yeah, on all the brim that caught sandworms. Yep. So they were caught really... And the tailor were on... You know, tailors like very similar to salmon. And the jewfish, you'll never know what it was caught on because it's always a lie.
Western Australia Lake Kununurra is warming up nicely and the Barra are starting to really kick into gear, Redmond.
Yeah, and there's a lot of money going into that lake as well. So there's a few competitions coming and we did speak about them last year through the winter months. So when that happens, we'll chuck them in this segment and keep everyone posted when they are on because over a metre plus in that lake and they're big fish. So Hamelin Bay has had non-stop huge salmon along the beaches. So, but these are big salmon. These are your 4 to 5, 6 kilo salmon. Once again, salmon, casting anything into them. Jigs have been the best because you can actually get to the fish if they're further out. Your poppers can tend to be a little bit on the lighter side of things at times.
Lighter gear is great fun on them as well. Like you really, if you want to have a great afternoon, you can go as low as a 2,500 really enjoy it.
And they can also, you're not going to necessarily lose much gear either. Yep. So if you run your drag right, it's just about tiring the fish out and catching the fish because it's not like you're fishing big, deep drop-offs with reefs and the likes. You're on sandy beaches. Not much can go wrong, so you get away with the light gear.
And I think if you're happy to, if you've caught a few and the next that you plan to throw back and you're finding them easier to catch, then crimp down on your hooks.
Barbless.
On your barbs.
Yep.
Just to look after the fish because they do get destroyed on those trebles, particularly when you're using heavier...
Yeah, metals.
Heavier lures.
Yeah.
But they're a great fish to fish for. Tasmania, Redmond.
Lake Crescent's trout fishing, great week this week. 10-pound fish. Plastics were very good. A lot of land-based guys.
Yep.
So that worked really, really well. And Eagle Hawk Neck is starting to see some bigger tuna coming in, which is good. Early still, but not necessarily early because we're going nuts here.
Yeah, it's interesting that like it's been... Good, but not
yeah, it's not phenomenal. Final. And then our mate Paul Worsling hooked some monster swordfish out of St. Helens as well. And I know a couple that did get landed as well from a few other crews. So Tassie's really pushing into its winter months where it can be on fire, as good as it gets around the world.
Port Phillip Bay and Western Port, just quickly, in terms of your staple fish, like your whiting and squid, how are they fishing and how are you targeting them at the moment?
So that long weekend we just had, the Anzac long weekend, prime tides, everything was good for Western Port and Port Phillip. Everyone pretty much caught fish. Yep. Beautiful whiting, beautiful squid. The gummies went really good.
Are you picking out going tides? What, as long as you want tidal moon, what's your target?
Yeah, because we were off that moon. Both tides were fantastic. So they both fished really well. But now we've hit this new moon. I think it's tomorrow by memory, Sunday. It's slowed up a little bit, so you've got to pick that outgoing tide.
Yep.
It's been a lot better. Western Port, Gwayne's been over there smacking the whiting, calamari, gummy sharks. He's been doing so well over there. So that's fishing really, really good too. But also, I spoke about it a few weeks ago, Eyre River. Another mate went down there the other week, and those salmon are still out the front of the entrance there. So if you do want to get some salmon, Eyre River is a place to go if you want to have a flick land-based off the beach.
Beautiful work, Redmond. That's what's biting in your part of the country. Let's get to the social club. We take your questions each and every week from social media. Send us a direct message, whether it be Facebook or Instagram, or download our Real Adventures app, and we'll do our very best to get back to you.
First question is from Jeff, and I'm glad he's asked you this. I'm going to change the word. It says boys, but I'm going to say danger. With all the talk of electrification of cars, boats next, would you buy one?
I would, but I want a little bit more. I want a greater network in terms of where you can charge them up. Wouldn't be a massive issue for me, simply because I have one at home, and that's predominantly where you go. But I reckon you want a slightly bigger charging network. And from what we're hearing, eventually...
How would you go? Night fishing?
Well, I was talking about cars. Boats, no, I need more information. I'm a bit like you. Like, I'm all for... I love technology. I think it's fantastic. Would I buy and put it on a boat?
You're not like me, because you're giving all this stuff a chance.
Well, I'm not. I would definitely do it with like a 15 horsepower or equivalent, which we've seen from Mercury. I would definitely do it on a smaller boat. Big one, not at the moment. You?
Nah, no chance. Not. I wouldn't risk it. Not until technology gets a bit further along. Not for what... I've got too much of my life at risk during the week. It's when you're...
Not for you.
Yeah, when you're traveling to Apollo Bay, 93 kilometres, and things aren't... Yeah, no, let's won't even go there.
The irony of that is you've got a pacemaker which is powered by a battery that lasts for 15 years.
Mm.
Yeah, but you're not happy to trust your life with a battery on a boat.
Yeah, but I've got a solar panelled hat that attaches to it.
No, you've got a hat with a
little helicopter.
With a little helicopter on top.
Attaches to a wire through my through my brain, but I haven't got one of those either. So.
Yeah, well, that's why there's so much room.
Danger. I read during the week, Gil and the AFL are off to the States to talk to potential streaming partners for the AFL.
This is an interesting question.
I don't even know where this is going. What does that mean for us that can't afford streaming services and can only watch footy on free to air? Will we miss out on games? Charles, die hard Blues fan.
Poor old Charles.
Sums up a bit, doesn't it? Craig,
Gil has, he's there. I think he got back late yesterday, late in the week with a few of the execs.
Didn't he quit a few weeks ago? He's still going.
Well, he'll finish up at the end of the year.
Okay.
This could be a huge game changer for the AFL. So the last few years have been, what we certainly understand, they've been COVID affected. But for all sports, but particularly in Australia, where we are off Broadway globally, it's not a massive market compared to the NFL, NBA, European soccer. That part's very, very clear. But for the first time in a long time, we've got genuine competition from the networks and TV broadcast providers. So it's a lot harder to generate that interest when there's only a couple of big players and you're not going to generate the dollars. But when, from what we're hearing, CBS, who owns Channel 10, Paramount Plus, have really invested heavily in streaming, all of a sudden YouTube the same. If you can get a couple of big players, it the money within the game is going to grow substantially. But what does that mean?
I was about to ask you that.
For your everyday football watcher? Well, there's a few games on the calendar that are sacrosanct. So the AFL Grand Final will always be on a free-to-air broadcast partner. But there is the potential that there would be some games, if you split up how the game is broadcast, that would only be on certain streaming networks. So, for example... If you could lock in Thursday night footy for every single week of the year, which would mean more five-day breaks, so players would have to tick that off. But say you did, it opens up Channel 9 as a potential, who have invested significantly in KO and Binge, obviously owned by, you know, the overarching being News Limited and Foxtel. It opens up splitting. All right, we're going to sell Thursday night footy to Channel 9. Channel 7 are going to have Friday, and Saturday is going to be YouTube. So you split them up in order to generate more revenue. But what it does mean is potentially the only way to broadcast and to view some of these games would be to have those
streaming.
Those streaming
services. I'm a Foxtel man. That's how I watch all my sport.
I would dare say Fox would have the rights to it all. They'll be a very big player again. It's such a big part of their business. And KO.
And it's not just national either.
No, you know, KO's gone. In 2017, they had no subscribers to, you know, hundreds of thousands now. So it's a huge part of that, which is owned, you know, a huge part of that is obviously Foxtel owned. So great question, Charles.
We love how it stuck to fishing boating.
It's good. You know, the space is definitely going to change. It's, you know, it'll be fascinating to see
when are we going to see? When could we see that? Could that be in the next couple of years?
Well, the current broadcast arrangements head to 2024. I dare say this will obviously be an extension on that.
Off that, yeah.
Or they might throw it away and go, we're going to renegotiate it, and this is how it's going to work. But I think with the success of Drive to Survive, which is obviously the F1 surfing, are doing a similar thing. I think there's real opportunity for the AFL, and I think this is where clubs need to. To kick into gear and get with the program, it's time to open the doors so fans can see more than they have previously. Stop with the worrying about the protected IP and game plans and those sorts of things. You're never going to give away a full game plan on your, you know, whether it be Drive to Survive or whatever it might be. But I think fans want to see more of the behind the doors action than what they currently get. And I think with the current, you know, the challenges that COVID has provided, I think the fans deserve to see what happens behind closed doors. There's so many interesting things and interesting storylines that appear that we didn't understand that we do now through Drive to Survive, and we've seen how popular the F1s have been, Redmond. You know, 400,000 plus over the course of the F1 weekend.
That's huge.
Biggest crowds that we've ever had, and that is a huge part due
just to watch a car.
To Netflix. Yeah, so I think this is the way that it's going. I think people want to see it, and I think clubs need to get with the program. This is where we're going. Open up your doors, and we'll all be better for it for a competition. There'll be more finances within the game because of opening the doors. All right, last one. We've gone a little far, but we'll squeeze one more in. Aaron, if I want to go out and target garfish specifically, how do I go about doing that? What conditions am I looking for, locations, etc.? Cheers, Pete.
Ideally, calm weather.
Yes.
Calm as you can possibly get it. It makes life so much easier.
Because these garfish obviously swim along the top of the surface, yep. So you want to see them almost.
If you can see them, it helps. Yep. And not only that, it keeps your float sitting better in the water too, and your burley doesn't get dispersed as far either. So burley's a key. A plastic little cheap $2 plastic container at the top with breadcrumbs and a bit of tuna oil. That'll get you started. A float with a little split-shot sinker with a very small hook on the end of it, depending on what brand you use, what size, but I won't go into that because every brand has its size, but a really small hook. And basically, you just want to get somewhere where there's structure and with weed beds. So Swan Bay is a fantastic area near me. You've also got all the Mornington side. You've got Beau Morris Yacht Squadron up there is all good.
But you can copy and paste that sort of rocky, weedy outcrop with
anywhere
around
South
Australia.
South Australia
is massive.
Yeah. Victoria.
Yep.
New South Wales, I slow down a little bit, but yeah, they're a great eating. I'm not a massive fish eater, as we know. I'm not huge on eating fish, but garfish are very well sought after fish to eat. They butterfly them. They're not too hard to take the bones out. People think they're harder than what they actually are. It's actually not. But another great way to get garfish is to spotlight them too. Get a flounder light, walk in water, shallow water at Clifton Springs, or once again that same sort of area with a net, and you can go dip net these garfish, and it's awesome, also great fun to do. So keep that in mind as well.
Beautiful work, Redmond. That is the Social Club. Make sure, and if you're interested in getting and joining in the conversation, send in your questions via a direct message to our Facebook and Instagram pages, and we'll do our best to get back to your questions. But they fill up every week, so we do our best to get to everyone where we can.
And we ramble on a little bit.
And we do ramble on. Coming up after the break, Australian wicketkeeper Alex Carey joins the Real Adventures Show.
Gearing up for Dometic. Dometic Patrol, an icebox with a sense of adventure. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Mobile living made easy. Dometic.
It's time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. And during the week, Redman, I said, we need a guest. And you haven't contributed a huge amount to the show over the years. But you have come through this morning.
I have.
You've gone Australian royalty, really. The Australian wicketkeeper Alex Carey joins us. Morning, Al.
Morning, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I couldn't quite believe that that Aaron had roped you into this, but we've since found out that during your recent tour of Pakistan, you're obviously very, very busy, and you've been looking through Aaron's videos of boat reviews.
Yeah, it's there's some pretty quiet times and some lonely times in Pakistan, and that's where I found myself. So,
geez, I'm going real well this morning, aren't I? Geez, how's this?
No, it was very well done. I think you've convinced me to actually go down to Christie's Beach and pick one up. So, exciting times ahead. But no, I'm excited to be on the show. It's a real honour to speak to you, boys.
Well, not as excited as we are. Now, for those that aren't aware, your sporting story, Al, over the past decade has been nothing short of extraordinary. Obviously, playing both football and cricket growing up.
Makes you look ordinary.
Makes everyone look ordinary, mate. And then you decide to chase the dream of AFL footy. You head to GWS. You don't quite make it there. And then you return to cricket. Not only return to cricket, but you become the Australian wicketkeeper. Do you pinch yourself and think, geez, bloody hell, it's been an interesting ride over the last sort of decade?
Yeah, absolutely pinch myself. No, it has been up and down, but very, very lucky to, I guess, be given the opportunities I have and, hung in the cricket game and didn't, throw the cricket bat away when I went up to GWS. So I'm pretty lucky, that's for sure. And no, I still remember back when I was 16. I was in the AIS AFL Academy, and I reckon, Paddy, you're a year or two ahead of me.
Yep. Who was the coach at the time? Was that Sando then?
I had Alan McConnell.
Yeah, I had Al as well.
Yep. And
showing your age, you Patrick.
I think there's 1 week where you go and spend a week with one of your clubs of choice, and in South Australia, I chose the Crows. And this was your first year, Paddy, and you were flying over from year 12 in the school holidays. And I still remember the impact you had on me. And it's great to see that the success that you've had. So, and that's on the footy field, not in the fishing boat. So it's fantastic to be on the show to speak to you guys. Definitely up and down. Very lucky to be standing behind the stumps to some of the I guess, Australian best fast bowlers that we've had.
You'd be lying if you said that you were honoured to talk to him about fishing. I'm going to ask you the big question. Is it footy or cricket?
It's cricket, mate.
No. Like, which one? They both could be a bit of work for him. Which one do you probably enjoy playing the most? I used to like footy more, but I was better at cricket. Not really good at either, but...
all I can say is that when I am away playing cricket, I'm watching AFL 360, I'm watching every footy show that's on TV, I'm watching every game of the round. I absolutely love watching the game of footy. And I guess looking back, I probably slightly preferred footy, but I probably knew I was a better cricketer, so I was always chasing what I didn't quite have. So lucky to be where I am, that's for sure. But No, I'm a footy nuffy as well, which keeps me sane when we're on tours.
Well, it's good to talk cricket and sport and all those sorts of things, but it's not really the reason that we got you on this morning. Now, the byproduct of being the Australian wicketkeeper, Redmond, is that you, of course, can then start to do the enjoyable things in life, like fishing and boating. And that brings us to the boat hunt, the boat search that you're on at the moment. Now, take us through the position you're in. You're looking for a new 6-metre boat and you're heading down to Christie's Beach. So you're looking at a North Bank, obviously.
Yeah, are we able to plug?
Bloody oath, plug away. Nah,
yeah,
good. We've both got them, so we do.
That's right. I thought it was good. That's probably the reason why I came on the show. Is to get around the boys at Christie's Beach.
There's an extra $5,000 off.
I've spent a bit of time in North Banks, and that's through an ex-cricketer in Gary Putland.
Yes.
He's mad keen. So he's going to help me with a fit out and what I choose down there with the North Bank boys. But it is difficult, I guess, trying to get enough time on your hands to convince the missus it's a good idea to buy a boat when you are away quite a bit and two young kids. But somehow she said she's coming down with me tomorrow to have a look. So I'm pretty excited to pump up, you know, the boats that they've got on offer.
Well, the important thing is you want to get – it's not about you wanting to get a boat. It's about the kids and you wanting to take them outside more, and the boat provides that vehicle.
And I'm guessing bigger is more safe. Is that a pretty good angle to go down?
And the more horsepower on the back, the faster you can get home if something goes wrong.
exciting times. I'm also lucky. The bloke who lives across the road from me took me out Sunday night. Kids went to bed and out we went for a little look and we didn't have any luck, but it's also good to know a guy with a boat and to live across the road from a good fella who played a bit of footy actually in the sandpool. He loves it as well, so I'm keen to get my own, but in the meantime it's nice to know a bloke with a boat.
Now, you're sort of timing it well because obviously one of the biggest challenges in South Australia over the last few years from a fishing perspective has been the closure of the snapper fishery. But we're hopeful at the end of 2023 that will come to a close and that will be open back up for all recreational fishermen. And it's something that you did growing up searching through your socials. There's a few photos of you holding some beautiful snapper. But if you look back through your sort of fishing history, what's the best catch that you've had throughout your upbringing in life, Al?
Yeah, good question. I reckon you always try to look back to your first memories and, Dad was keen. Brother was, still is super keen. And I think those memories when you're a youngster, reeling in your first squid or even a Tommy Ruff off the jetty, we spent a fair bit of time on the York Peninsula and out in Moonta and Port Hughes. And got a trip there in a couple of weeks. So they're really good memories of the experience. But in terms of catch, I'm going to go international and head over to New Zealand. We had a series over there and I reckon it was game two of the T20 and we'd just chased down the record T20 score of the international T20. And
so you're very happy with yourselves. Yep.
Yeah, I scored one not out off one ball, so I I celebrated and had about an hour's sleep and we're on the charter off Auckland with a few of the boys and always wanted to catch a kingfish and we were lucky enough to land a few before the swell sort of picked up and
big models over there.
That's up. So that was pretty exciting. The kingfish, they're always something that I guess the guys that I speak to here want to catch. Local snapper and whiting, I guess you can't really beat. I went out the other night, caught a few ruggers, as you mentioned. You throw them back chasing the whiting, which are lovely to eat. So if I could choose any fish to catch, it's the King George. But a heap of tuna around too, so I've landed a couple of them in a mate's North Bank boat off Victor Harbour.
I reckon if you are can persuade the missus. And if you head down to Port Macdonald in a few hours, I can meet you there and land you 100 kilo plus bluefin if you like. If you want to have a go at that.
Yeah, it sounds good. I reckon I've probably got a few brownie points to catch up over the last couple of months being away.
He's been away for months. We're chatting with Australian wicketkeeper Alex Carey. Now, on your socials, you've got you've posted an experience snorkeling the Kilsby sinkhole, which for those unaware, it's really close to Mount Gambier, and Mount Gambier is really well known for some incredible cave diving. Now, this links in a bit with, I watched, and Aaron's watched this as well, and we got the idea off your captain, Pat Cummins, when he posted about the rescue. Incredible documentary around a group of...
Thailand.
In Thailand, around a group of soccer players that got trapped in a cave. Have you watched the doco itself, and did you think about that when you were snorkeling the cave, or you didn't go too deep when you snorkeled there?
Well, I've watched the doco 3 times, and that's no word of a lie. That's my go-to recommendation for anyone that wants to, sit down for an hour and a half or 2 hours and watch something pretty inspirational. I absolutely love that. And luckily enough, I dove the hole before I actually saw that doco.
Good timing.
There wasn't too many concerns there. And the size of the wetsuits that we had on, I wasn't getting too deep anyway. An amazing experience and definitely something that if you do get the opportunity to do is go and look at this crystal clear cave that's, I don't know, 20, 30 metres deep. You feel, very peaceful. And I do understand why cave divers do what they do, but also I wouldn't have the minerals to go any deeper than a couple of metres.
I'm going to take you back a little bit to discussing the North Bank 6 metre purchase. Now, on the show, Pat, you and I are always talking about buying the right boat for yourself.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily buying the boat to impress Bob and John up the road. It's about buying the boat that caters for yourself. Now, you got the options of, say, for just the range, we'll go 6 metres, 650, 750 in the North Bank range. We'll go through. What's the reason behind actually choosing the 6 metre? Because a 650 is a bloody good-looking boat.
I think, personally, going down there and jumping in a couple, I'll find it hard to not walk out of there with a hard top. But saying that, realistically, there's a bit of storage involved. I think, speaking to everyone I have spoken to about them is I'm probably going to be able to do what I need to do in a 600 and do what a 650 does. Looking at yours, Paddy, you could probably put a couple of cars on it, head to KI, and
it's a ferry. It's currently in my driveway at the moment, and there's no space for me or the family I took it last week.
But I'm looking for a bit of a mix. And with young kids, it's going to be your better days out in the water. So the hard top protection's probably not required for me at this stage. And maybe when I get a bit more time on my hands and comfortable in the 600, then maybe I'll jump up. But I think it's going to be able to do what I want to do. Bit of storage, towing. I haven't got the Toyota Land Cruiser. I might have to jump up and do that. But it's I'm excited to jump in a few boats, get a feel of them, get a feel for size. Hopefully Louis loves one, and we can sign something off in the next few days. But it's pretty exciting. They're beautiful. They look beautiful. They do a great job. They're friendly down in Christie, so it's going to be hard to for the missus. No, I reckon.
I just invested in Mack trucks just to pull Pat's boat around so I can get around the state.
Al, we really appreciate your time this morning and chatting about not only your passion, obviously, for sport and particularly cricket, but also fishing in the outdoors and the family man that you are. So thank you for joining us on Real Adventures this morning.
No, it's been fun. Thanks for having me on. And, take care, boys. Thank you.
Alex Carey, Australian wicket keeper. That was gearing up for Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy.
Reds Review for Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance.
It's now time for Red's review. And we're talking gaffs this morning, Redman. What do you need for your everyday fishing gaff? What's necessary for big barrels and chasing bigger fish? And you've gone through a list of four for us.
Yeah, we've actually spoke about this on the show a few years ago, and I thought it'd be a great time to, I guess, go through it all again, because the tuna fishery in our country and the world is just getting bigger and bigger. And gaffs are a big part of a tuna fishery. It's about looking after your fish and whatnot as well.
It's as much about looking. Like, people think gaff, it's to kill a fish. Absolutely not. When you're dealing with big fish like this, as you said, this is the simplest way to keep them healthy, so they're not thrashing around banging their heads against the boat.
Even handling it in the boat, even getting it out of the boat to weigh it. So the gaff, we're talking about gaffs, but the review today is going towards, online we're looking at Wellesley's Tackle, just the Hook'em range.
And we just picked a random tackle store.
Like, literally, they had a range of Hook'em gaffs there.
Yep, so they've got a great website. That's why we chose them, so you can actually see all the specifications. They've got good pictures of the gaffs. Some really good really good tackle stores are great when you go into store, but don't necessarily have as good a website. And Wells just have a terrific website, so that's why I've chosen them.
Meat hook, what it's known as, that's a terrific thing to have on a boat. Now, what a meat hook is good for, once again, it's good for that release shot that we spoke about earlier in the show. We actually speak about it later in the show. It's about basically releasing the fish. You can actually get the meat hook gaff. And what it is a short gaff. Sort of looks like a pirate's hand in a way, Pat, with a hook on the end of it.
Yep.
It's a good way to handle a fish. Not only to pull into the boat with a big tuna into the boat, but also to get the tuna out of the boat and to maneuver the tuna out of the boat. The reason I mentioned tuna is because we are in a heavy tuna fishery right now, and I think it's relevant to what gaffs are used for. You can use them for anything, sharks and whatnot as well. So a meat hook is good, and they're up towards $100. Now, a long gaff, and the reason I say a long gaff is a 1.8-meter gaff is I like to run it as long as you can get a gaff. So 1.8 to 2 meters. Now, the reason that I suggest this with a 4 to 6-inch diamond, a diamond gaff end on the end of it, the reason I recommend this is because if that tuna is out wide and you only get one shot at it, the longer it is, the more chance you got a gaff in it.
Yep.
That's to be honest there.
Yep.
Now, as my second gaff for a big fish, I like to have another long gaff, but it's only about 1.4, something you can handle easier. So the first one goes in, and that's sort of just to secure it.
Yep.
And then the next one that you put into the fish, it's actually more, it's still the exact same diamond. It's the same gape on the end of it, but it's smaller and easier to handle. So your mate or yourself can get that second gaff into it. Now, roughly around 1.4 meters. Now, another gaff that I like to have on the boat is just a general small gaff. So this is for maybe your gummy sharks, your kingfish, your small tuna. And that's only sort of around 1.2. And it might be only a 3 to 4 inch gape on the end of it as well, with just a round or a diamond end to it on the business end of it.
Which is important in a sense if you're not fishing out of a really big boat
and
the side gunnels that you've got to actually store this size gaff. That's more of your 5 meter and below where you don't, you stretch for room, so you can't store the really big ones, and this sits perfectly in that.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that as well, it's those big gaffs will just rip through smaller fish. If you put one of those big gaffs through a kingy, it's going to rip through it and destroy it. So these smaller gaffs are good. Now, the last one that I want to mention is a flying gaff. I think it's extremely important to have a flying gaff on the boat if you target big species. Now, the likes of swordfish, the likes of mako sharks, big bronzies, something big, angry, and strong. So what a flying gaff is, it's fixed to a pole. It attaches to a pole. It doesn't fix to the pole. So those were all fixed gaffs that we spoke about earlier.
Yes. Yep.
This is flying gaff. And what happens is as you gaff the fish with the flying gaff, you actually hold the rope in your hand, which is actually tied off to the cleat of the boat. So
it's safer for you if you're fighting an angry
species. You're not holding a mako or a swordfish. if you have to let go, you can let go.
Yep.
And as you gaff the fish or the shark or whatever it is, you push the other way, pop the pole out, and then it's just attached to the rope and you can handle it yourself, get the next gaff into it. And all that range there is between $100 to $200. You're pretty much going to get all your gaffs.
Yeah, they're not crazy expensive.
No, they're not. And for those barrels, you're going to need a minimum 2 gaffs. Plus, I reckon the mouth meat gaff, as I like to call it, that's one of the most important ones to have, because it just allows you not to have things going everywhere, poles going everywhere, and you can handle and look after the fish with care.
I think the other thing that you can add to this, if you want to, is and I'll just use Railblazer as an example, but they're an accessory provider that is great for storage and clips when it comes to not only rod holders, but gaffs if you want to actually install it.
Oh, they've got
it.
All that stuff too.
Yeah, exactly right. Yep. So you can put it, install it in your boat, and then you're storing your gaffs off the floor. They're not moving as much and all those sorts of things. So beautifully done, Redman. That is Red's review for Club Marine.
Red's review for Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's Tip, and we're talking about releasing fish and swimming them rather than bringing them on deck. And this is particularly relevant for billfish, redmen, and those really big model tuna that you don't plan on taking home.
Yeah, and I got managed to get a few barrels during the week, and we managed to release some as well. And like you said, there's sort of a thing out there in the fishing space and world that you don't actually keep marlin. So you get you can keep one. The odd people do. The odd person does keep one here and there, but just naturally,
people don't.
You just don't keep them. Like,
and it's funny because you can catch a sailfish that might be 3 years old that's 2.5 meters long, and people are go up in arms when you've killed a beautiful sailfish. Yet they don't speak a word when you kill a brim that's 40 centimeters that might be 15 years old.
And it's just the way it is in the fishing world. It's sort of one of those unwritten rules in a way. But, yeah, those marlin, you want to keep the boat. So when you do get a bigger fish and you want to release it, you want to keep the boat actually in gear. Now, it's sort of like walking the dog, as I've always joked about it. Once you get that fish on the leader, if you actually get a nice firm grip of the leader of a marlin and have your boat in gear, without actually even touching the fish and peeing it off, if you just keep its head just subtle under the water, a lot of the time the marlin will actually just swim with the boat.
Yep.
It might carry on a little bit.
They're not going to thrash enormously.
Not all the time. Yep. You get the odd one that does here and there. And I didn't realize how much control you had on marlin until a fellow by the name of Nathan, who works on Headhunter Fishing Charters. I love my marlin fishing. I think I'm all right at it. But when you go out, I speak to the charter boat operators that literally do it all
every day.
They've got tips and tricks. And he explained it to me a few years ago. And I started to do it rather than grabbing. We grab the bill for the photo. But initially, when we get him ready, we can walk these fish next to the boat. But it's a bit different with a barrel bluefin. It doesn't work the same as a marlin. Now, during the week, I landed some beautiful big tuna out of Port McDonald in Portland, and we released a couple of fish. Now, you can't actually grab the bill of a or the face of a bluefin. You can't do it because I don't have one.
You
and
try. You just, the hand's just going to keep going, though.
And they've got quite sharp teeth. So I like to use one of those meat gaffs, which is the one that we just reviewed earlier in the show.
Yes.
And I actually put it in the bottom lip of the mouth. And
which is not going to hurt the fish.
No, it doesn't hurt the fish. I don't go anywhere it's near its gills or anything the likes, just to get the photo and to release it. You don't want to go bringing this 120-kilo fish, for instance, into the boat, because as soon as it hits the deck, bang, boom, bang, it's not good for the fish. Let's be honest. Every barrel that I've caught, I reckon 90% of them are pretty much done once they hit the deck of the boat. They're not real healthy. So it's about handling it at the side of the boat. Get the leader nice and tight on the side, walk it right up and try and get a mouth gaff into it, and then basically hold on, because they can pull quite hard still, because they are a powerful, strong fish, which you need to be aware of. But the key to it is the same as the marlin, is to keep the boat in gear. Keep the water flowing through the gills and keep the momentum of the tail just kicking with you. And like I said earlier, it's like walking the dog. It sort of just goes with you and you keep the momentum going. If you knock that boat out of gear, Pat, and you start drifting down the wind, you're in a bit of trouble, and the fish will just lose its momentum. It'll tend to fall one way, and it will just, bang, gone, and you'll rip your arm off and lose your gaff or whatever it is. So that there is Red's tip on how to handle a big fish at the boat. Now it's time for the flying gaff, and I haven't actually read the gaff yet, Patrick. Fire away.
The flying gaff this weekend, Redman, it is heading to the AFL commentators, for which there are many, that have totally missed the mark when it comes to the critiquing of umpires and the abuse they receive. All I'm hearing at the moment, when I watch a game and when I listen to the commentary post-game, is how this interpretation is destroying the game. What's destroying the game is the whinging of commentators around umpires. Because what the AFL are trying to do, and I totally agree with this after going to watch some, my sister played some footy on the weekend, and the umpires that were umpiring her game at started at 2 o'clock, that umpired four games earlier. They started at 8 a.m. There is nowhere near enough people to cater for the amount of games that are in existence at the moment because of the growth of AFLW, which is wonderful. But the biggest challenge that we've all got is making it an environment that is inviting for umpires to go to. So for all this constant conversation and storyline around
umpires,
players turning around and looking to the umpire and then 50s being paid, I'm really hoping in a month's time we're no longer talking about this because it's just the normal. Yes, it's going to take some time for players to adjust, but the bigger picture is the entire game, what we're trying to promote. And at the moment, commentators have just got this wrong. They've got this so wrong because all they do is bang on about it. Spend less time talking about the umpiring of the game in the 50s that are paid around dissent and more time around the actual game itself, because we'll be better for it as a competition and our junior ranks will be far better for it with more umpires joining the league ranks and we put less stress on those officiating local games of footy right around the country.
There you go. That's the gaff for the week. You've been listening to Real Adventures. We'll see you next week.